Buying tickets can be complicated and confusing, but there is a better way to buy with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to every type of live event. Whether you are searching for a last-minute deal, planning a night out with friends, or just need to find the perfect gift, SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like being there in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. We have the SeatGeek app on our phones, and it's by far the easiest way we have found to shop for tickets. We can be anywhere with just a few taps. Instantly find seats. Tristan and I actually just used SeatGeek last month to buy tickets to a minor league game, and it was a great experience. SeatGeek saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. And to get you the most bang for your buck, SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. And best of all, listeners to this fine show get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. So just download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code FFB today. That's promo code FFB for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase.
This is one of those fun weekends of combo meals. It reminded me that somebody replied to me that Evan Gattis had 11 triples.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
baseball's crazy.
This is the Fantasy Focus Baseball Podcast. Here are your hosts, Tristan Cockcroft and Eric Carabel.
Hi there and welcome to Fantasy Focus Baseball. It's a beautiful Monday morning, May 14th, 2018. I am merely Eric. He is league-winning Tristan, and we've got researcher Kyle Soppy, editorial watchdog Leo Howe, and producer Anthony Calatayud as well. Another big weekend of baseball. Unfortunately, injuries are the big story, I think, but a lot of great performances, Tristan, as well, that we will get to. No hitters, as far as I know, but still another
did
great
we get,
weekend.
Did we get any of the alerts? A no-hitter is developing.
Yeah, no Jeremy Hellickson through six innings or anything like that.
Yeah.
Hope everybody enjoyed their Mother's Day. There's no mothers here, but we all have mothers, so that's it was a good day, and I think I watched everything but baseball with my family. There was hockey, there was hoops, there was LeBron, you know. One of those. The soccer, of course. Sorry, Leo.
Yeah, let's not talk about that.
All right. I was following you on Twitter just to see what you would say. I was rooting for you, but you needed a lot. Anyway, here's the buzz. All right, and the big story, of course, is Seattle Mariners second baseman Robbie Cano, who had his hand broken by a Blaine Hardy pitch. Blaine Hardy is indeed a pitcher with Detroit. And we don't have a timeline yet on how long Cano will be out. There could be surgery involved. I would think we're not seeing him for the rest of this month for sure. And it could go into July. If you drafted Cano thinking, I'm going to get a safe batting average, lots of runs batted in, and at least 150 games, this year you're not. And he hadn't been on the DL since 06, which is...
That's the only time, too, that he's ever been on it, I believe.
Quite a feat.
Yeah. I mean, actually, that's been his career strength, and this goes historically all the way back to the game's beginning, that he actually was one of the most durable second basemen in the history of the game.
Yeah, and numbers-wise, you know, nobody thought he was going to have another 39 home runs, but he's pretty safe for batting average and runs batted in. If the 39 homers were like 22, so be it. He was actually the number 16 second baseman on the player radar last year. That includes guys who were eligible at other spots you might not expect, so... Probably a little bit overrated in fantasy, but, you know, if I was drafting again, obviously now with the injury, which could be 6 weeks, like, you wouldn't take him in round six. But, you know, you never really fault yourself for taking Robbie Cano in round six because you know you're getting good numbers. It's not like he's falling apart. So he's a guy, to me, to trade for the second half of the season. I don't think he's going to hit for a ton of power because he wasn't doing that so far. But he bats third for a major league team with guys that get on base. And he's always safe for batting average. So this could be a borderline top 10 second baseman from the time he returns.
Give me a guy you trade for. I'm curious about the philosophy here. It's really hard to trade for guys on the DL, but I like where you're going with this, that there's no reason to completely panic about what he could provide you after his return.
The problem with trading for a guy like Cano, okay, is that a lot of us don't think about 6 weeks from now. We think about today. Like, but you have a league in which you're short an outfielder and you can't get one unless it's a trade because there's no way to pick up a player.
Right.
And
pickups are once a week. That's
right. Pickups are once a week, and the deadline was on Mother's Day, and you didn't get it, which is fine. Sure. I missed it too. And, you know, if you need a guy, then you can't trade for Cano because he's not going to be back for a little while. It might be the All-Star break.
Right.
So it's all dependent on your team, the strategy, what you need. to me, if you like in a league with only three bench spots, it is a little tougher. It, you know, maybe you have Bumgarner in your DL slot. I don't know. So it's right. a little tougher to trade for a guy like that. But I mean, I would look to trade. Obviously, no top 100 player. But
how about Rugi Odor?
Of course. Well, I mean, I'm not a fan of his. You know, personally, or
no, but I know, I mean, but I mean, that's a
and
guy
he's who's back, but like he's back, and he's not going to do what I think he's, you know, what most people think. He's overrated right. too, and the batting average kills you. I was thinking like a pitcher, a mid rounds pitcher is the guy you're trading to get Cano. That's probably what you could do okay. at this point.
Okay,
you know, I mean,
the
I'm
guy who's driving me crazy, in fact, Dylan Bundy. Would you trade him for Cano?
I would, and I'm, you know, and look. Bundy could have easily given up seven runs on Sunday as opposed to two hits over seven shutout innings. I thought he was going to pitch well. I thought he was going to fix what was wrong, and he did.
And you're right.
But his next outing could be a train wreck again.
Well,
but
the thing is, what you were onto on here, and this is where I've whiffed, is that I guess it was a mechanical thing. I mean, the thing that's remarkable about this is that his fastball was the best performing one in seven starts in over a month. That's, I mean, it's a completely different guy who pitched yesterday.
The Mariners are going to fill in with stuff you don't want in fantasy. Let's talk about second baseman or slash middle infielders that are available in ESPN leagues, and I'll name some names. You tell me if you like them.
Sure.
Scooter Jeanette is up to 56% rostered. It should be 80%. He's legit. Everything he did last year looks legit. I don't think he's going to hit, you know, flirt with 30 home runs, but betting 329, he was the number one player over the past week in ESPN standard leagues. He could hit 22 home runs. And he's not losing his job to Nick Senzel. Like, if Jeanette is available in your league, he is actually outperforming Cano this season.
I think Jeanette is why Senzel is still in the minors and was still in the minors at the beginning of the year. If there's no Jeanette, then Senzel starts the season with the team. So, dead on. I do like the guy. I think he is underrated. I think the dual eligibility... Well, actually, he doesn't have it in all leagues, I don't think.
Scooter?
Yeah, last year he had the outfield. I think in the leagues that had a lower qualification, you probably also have the outfield. But yeah, they're going to play him. There's no reason for them to just keep him on the bench and let a rookie come in and take over for him. That's exactly what we were looking at. Yeah,
batting average. Senzel is like August. I don't think we see him until then.
Well, he has he had vertigo or something?
Yeah, he's been on the DL too.
Yeah.
Some other options here. Alan Hansen of the Giants. What a first 14 games for him replacing Joe Panik. Four home runs, three stolen bases, a good batting average. He sat out yesterday's game with a hamstring injury, but I don't think it's serious. Alan Hansen looks pretty legit right now, and I don't think Panik is coming back this month. So, to me, Hansen's a good pickup.
Hansen's a curious guy because it's been power so far, and traditionally in the minors he was a big-time speedster.
He's got three steals, too.
He does, but I mean, I'm not sure how much of the power I expect. I think the stolen base pace is exactly why you're getting him. And the, I don't know. How high is the floor for batting average? He's a pretty good contact guy. What, 270?
Maybe?
Yeah.
I mean, here's some other guys. You tell me if you're interested. Matt Duffy of Tampa. It's a good week. You know, didn't it for a ton of power with the Giants. Leo, maybe you could speak to this as a Rays fan. I don't think Matt Duffy is safe for just about anything. But what do you think?
Safe?
Yeah, I mean, batting average, power, there's not a lot of power there.
But he's a contact guy who's been based around batting average. The thing that I like about Duffy, and I'll let Leo talk about what he sees here, but the schedule is great this week. And when I'm trying to fill this spot, I will happily take the 7 days worth of good games and hope that it builds from there.
That's fair.
I mean, yeah, that you don't necessarily feel safe with any one stat because, I mean, he hit 258 across two teams the last time he played regularly, and then he's been away forever. Like, he's got this like DeSclafani vibe to me that like I'm still waiting for him to, like, when DeSclafani does eventually come back, you're gonna be skeptical of whatever you see. But with Duffy, like, he's one of the best hitters. He's gonna get the volume, so if you're in a league where you need that, you know, he's gonna bat high in that order whenever he's healthy, and he seems to be so far. But yeah, like, he's not gonna give you any power. He's barely gonna run. So there's not a lot there. It's really just like he's very much a filler kind of play to me rather than something where you're looking for any sort of upside in any category at all, really.
I would agree. And I would rather have Yoelmer Sanchez, who I think will play every day for the White Sox and could at least hit double-digit homers and steal double-digit bases, and there's no injury. Yoan Moncada is coming back on Tuesday, but that will not affect Sanchez, who plays third base regularly. Some other guys on the most added list, Daniel Descalzo, who's going to lose his playing time to Jake Lamb soon. Wilmer Difo, who again will lose his playing time to Daniel Murphy. When's that happening? Have you heard an update on Murphy?
That is exactly what I wonder, is Daniel Murphy's injury has taken a while. I'm thinking this all last night. He's really just in the workout stage. It's not up to the point of rehab, so I'd have to think we're still looking at a couple of weeks at minimum.
Speaking of the Nationals, your thoughts on this Mark Reynolds, Matt Adams situation? situation. I know the schedule is very interesting for the Nationals this week. Mark Reynolds makes his debut for the season on Sunday Night Baseball on ESPN, hits two home runs, and because Ryan Zimmerman's on the disabled list. How do you see this all playing out with the three of them?
Well, I see that interesting for the schedule is the kind way of describing it's an awful schedule, or I wouldn't use these guys because they play five games and play a lot of elite pitching. How do I see it playing out? I think Adams is going to play pretty regularly during the hot spells, but he's cooled off a little bit over the past couple of days. If they have to sit him out against the lefties, they will. Unfortunately, this week they face three of them in the five games. That's not a good mix for him. And I think you're going to have to do nothing but daily plays with a guy like Mark Reynolds. We're talking about the larger than standard formats.
Let's talk about Freddie Peralta. He's the Milwaukee rookie pitcher who went to Coors Field for his debut on Sunday without warning. We didn't find this out basically until the day of. And he throws 5 2/3 innings of one-hit ball and strikes out 13, the most strikeouts in a game by a debuter since Steven Strasburg. But Peralta, I knew the name. This is not a guy like that who we expect to put up gaudy strikeout totals without giving anything else up. He did strike people out since the beginning of last season, 12 batters per nine, but he walks people. And that's why he wasn't thought of as one of Milwaukee's top prospects here. So I think we've seen a lot, and maybe this is a calm idea for somebody, but we've seen a lot of pitchers debut this season, but we didn't feel like they were going to stick around, or we didn't feel like that first outing was indicative of who they are. I mean, Fernando Romero, Nick Kingham, the guy on the Yankees, Herman, Peralta, how do you rank these guys?
Well, Herman didn't have the best of outings.
That was terrible over the weekend.
Actually, Joey Lucchesi and Fernando Romero are two guys we have discussed who had the advantage of deception. Peralta could fall into that. He's kind of like got that crossover his body sort of delivery, which I think is a little tough to read. I think it's going to take hitters a trip around the league before he gets caught up with, and that explains his K's. This is all a play for K's, this guy. Eric, did you look at this? He threw 91% fastballs.
Yeah, it's not going to last. I mean, he's not Bartolo Colon, but he can't keep getting hitters out this
Right, I agree. I mean, I think that right now he's capitalizing upon the unfamiliarity of players, and because this was announced late, I think there was that. We mentioned Romero's got the very low spin, which is unusual for a guy like that getting a lot of ground balls. Maybe you can juice a little bit with the orange here. If Peralta sticks, this is the other thing, too. Remember, he's only up because Chase Anderson's on the DL. He might miss one turn. We don't know that yet. Zach Davies is working his way back. We don't know what the state is there. So I can't even tell you what day Peralta's officially pitching yet.
Yeah, we saw people in our expert league spend big money on Peralta and Eduardo Ramos, for that matter, and I'm just laughing. I don't see it. I don't think you have to add Peralta in a 10-team league. If you want to because you think he's going to keep doing this, go ahead. But I'd rather have Fernando Romero of the Twins. If you want to compare two guys who recently came up, I think Romero sticks in the Twins rotation. And that outing against Ohtani, that was pretty good. I mean, Romero only went five innings, but he seems in control, you know?
Ohtani was okay, too.
Ohtani was very good. Probably should have been gone after six. Then he puts a man on in the seventh, and of course he scores. We'll get to the closer report a little bit later on. Anything else you would like to talk about from the weekend statistically before you get to the common meals and the closers?
Should we dabble a little bit in the Met and the ex-Met?
Matt Harvey.
DeGrom leaving after one outing, and then Matt Harvey having a respectable first outing.
Yeah, I mean, I watched DeGrom a little bit yesterday, and he threw 45 pitches in the first thing. I don't think he was hurt. I just think it was a lot. And to give up no runs, a lot of effort. Uh-huh. I understand why the Mets pulled him from the outing. And I was not, as a Phillies fan, I wasn't unhappy with that because I thought they'd win the game. It took a while. You know, Harvey, I just can't get interested in at all. I didn't see any of it, but he doesn't have the same stuff. And also, the Dodgers just aren't hitting at all. I mean, they got swept at home in a four-gamer by the Reds, who I would have said are one of the three worst teams in the league. That's just a strange team right now.
Yeah.
So I don't think my thoughts before the weekend on DeGrom or Harvey have changed. I want to see more.
I was a little bit surprised that after Harvey ended up with the Reds, that and by the way, he was available in all of my leagues out there except for Tout Wars, that nobody even placed a speculative $0 bid on him.
I wouldn't.
Well, if you're in a league where you have 7-8 bench spots, why wouldn't you just throw him on there?
Oh, yeah, great. I mean, how many leagues do you have 7-8 bench spots?
A lot of them, actually.
I don't have any.
I've got a lot with that. And in those, he was, I mean, there was only one league where he had a $1 bid in one of these leagues, which is very unusual to me because just simply based on the change of scenery thing, I mean, what if that's all it was? where he could give you some streaming value. I'm not excited either. It's just, I think it should be mentioned.
I would avoid him. And again, in ESPN leagues, you have three bench spots. I can't make any case for Matt Harvey there.
Yeah, no, it's not. I don't think he's even close to being relevant in our standard.
I have David Price in an Ottinger league. I did not use him Saturday. He pitched fairly well. I didn't see it. But I mean, reports are he pitched fairly well. I don't trust him either. I mean, obviously, if you're saying Price versus Harvey from here on out, you would take Price.
Price.
But who makes more starts?
Yeah, that's fair.
You can make the case it might not be Price. Any other stuff? Charlie Morton, man, 14 strikeouts, nary a walk. Yeah. What is this list? Here's a list of all the qualified pitchers with a lower ERA and a higher K9 since July 25th of last year, regular season. Verlander, Scherzer, Severino. Charlie Morton has become a top 20 starting pitcher that we don't rank that way.
Yeah, I want to see one of these. I love the lists where it's, here's the list of all the players. Silence.
Why aren't we ranking Morton better? I'm going to when I do my Monday
health.
Update.
Health. It's the Paxton thing.
But he was healthy last year, wasn't he?
No.
How many starts did he make?
No Astro qualified for the ERA title.
So that's a bad sign.
Last year, none. He had 146 innings and 25 starts.
So it's a little bit Dodger-like. Why push anybody to 30 starts?
I think in his case, it's genuinely the health question. But I would say that last year was a very promising sign. And going into the postseason, handling that, coming into this year with nothing but positives, we should lean towards the likelihood he sets new career highs and starts in innings.
Let's talk relievers now. It's the closer carousel.
The closer carousel.
I don't think Philadelphia changed closers. Hector Neris did not get the save chance after he blew one over the weekend, but I don't think he lost the job. I think it might be a committee, in which case it could be just about anybody. Gabe Kapler is clearly leaning towards Tommy Hunter when a left-handed hitter is up. He's starting like the eighth or ninth inning when a lefty's up because of the pitch of his slider. And I like that. Adam Morgan comes off the DL in a day or two. I think he might be involved. Ramos. Sir Anthony Dominguez would be the one guy I think could take over from Neris and keep the job to himself. But I don't think we're there yet. And by the way, Kapler knows the deal. He brought in Sir Anthony Dominguez for the eighth inning against the Mets' heart of the lineup.
Right.
Leaving Ramos for the ninth against the bottom of the order, which could tell us a lot there. I think Dominguez actually gets more saves than Ramos the rest of the season if you want to speculate on a guy replacing Neris.
Okay, I could get behind that. And I've seen some people picking him up. Pretty good stuff.
White Sox went to Bruce Rondon to save Sunday's game, even though Joaquin Soria was available. Nate Jones blew up earlier in the weekend. What do you think happens there? I mean, why wouldn't you, if you're the White Sox, just let Rondon close? Walks people.
I mean,
they're not going to trade him.
I don't want to. I'm not going anywhere near Rondon. Rondon's. I mean, haven't we seen enough of him over the years?
We've seen enough, but closing is about opportunity, not skills. To me, you can fake your way through 30 saves.
I think
on a bad team, Shane Green can fake his way to 30 saves this season. I can see that.
Yeah, but his skills are much better than Bruce Rondon's. Bruce Rondon throws hard,
he does.
That's where we stop.
It's been a while since Fernando Rodney blew a save, just saying.
Yeah, but that's another case where Fernando Rodney also has better skills than Bruce Rondon.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm not saying Bruce Rondon is good. I'm saying he might be their closer. They're different things.
I know, but I think in those cases, that's just chasing a couple of days worth of a hot streak, and then he's going to come in and he's going to have a game like Chapman's on, what was it? I think it was Saturday's game was the one where he had three walks.
Oh, yeah. Oh. It's not going to be pretty. But,
where he throws no strikes in an 11-pitch sequence, and then he's out, and then we never talk about him again.
Myriad fantasy managers aren't asking for pretty. They're asking for saves. They just
guy does that, he's not going to get them again. I mean, do you want to go anywhere near the White Sox bullpen?
Not really.
Exactly.
I mean, if I was ranking closers, and I am, I have rankings, I don't think any White Sox reliever would be in my top 30 now. I can't make a case. I'd rather have, two or three Brewers. I'd rather have...
Okay, top guy for the White Sox. Top-ranked guy for the White Sox.
I think right now it still has to be Soria. I think it's still Soria.
I'm going with Nate Jones because I'm just not interested in Soria.
That outing was so bad over the on Thursday. I don't know.
One outing.
But Bundy was in one outing? I mean, come on.
Bundy was two outings.
The hitting side, here are the combo meals.
Hey, it's a combo meal!
Half these guys are Braves or played with the Braves. Ozzie Albies on Friday, his second of the season, won a 7 with multiple combo meals a season. 7 players have multiple combo meals. What's the record for multiple combo meals in a season? 10? I mean, how many guys have
the record for multiple combo
for
meals?
Players with multiple combo meals. I would think that we're closing in on it. That's
for a
high.
Team.
You no, mean for a player.
For a team with for a player with multiple combo. What do you mean?
Which season has had the most players with at least
Thank
two
you, Leo.
Combo meals? So the season that has seen the highest volume
and
of
what's
multiple
the number?
Combo
what's the number?
Meals.
Like we already have 7 players with multiple combo meals a season. I gotta believe that's high for this Ooh. Point of the year. But smarter people
I'll
than
see
me will
if
figure
I can
it out.
Find
you
that
don't
out,
do it right this second. I'm just wondering. It seems like that's a high number. Evan Gaddis on Saturday. I don't know how he hits the second career one. I think.
Yep.
Ender Inciarte, who's really much better than most people think. Stop with the he can't steal bases batting 6th or 7th. He can, and he is. I don't think anybody has more steals right now.
I love Todd Zola's comment where he's like, "But I bought him for steals, and he's hitting homers.
That's okay.
How
too.
Am I going to fill my steals?"
I think he had double digits last year.
This is one of those fun weekends of combo meals. It reminded me that somebody replied to me that Evan Gaddis had 11 triples.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
baseball's crazy. Trey Turner had one on Sunday. Joey Votto and Jose Ramirez as well. Indians, wow, they scored some runs this weekend. Buy low and Edwin if you can. Trust me, it's going to be get a lot better. You saw Lindor and Ramirez have great weeks. Trey Turner won me a head-to-head matchup with his first inning run scored. Any thoughts on any of these players that we haven't already said?
On the combo meal guys. No, I mean you know Ozzie Albies, by the way, hit that was the homer that he hit left-handed right after we talked about it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yay! We inspired him.
Acuna has slowed down a little bit, but that's still a really great lineup. And I'm still getting flack over my Nick Markakis comments, but go ahead. I mean, until he... Look, you were right on Didi Gregorius. He went like over 30. Markakis might do that.
What's the flack on Markakis? Let's dig into that.
Well, I mean, we've talked about it enough. I mean, on Didi, it's the batting average. We still think the power's there. On
Markakis, but I just don't understand what the flag is. I mean, yeah,
people just don't think he can remotely sustain what he's doing. And I think, protecting Freeman in the lineup, that it's a power surge. It's a contract year. He's trying to do different things. He's always hit for, 290. I think Nick Markakis...
So this is the episode of Tristan Defends Eric here, and that is that I did question a little bit the batting average part with Didi, but I love where you were going with the power approach from him. In this case, I think I like the Markakis batting average comment, and that was exactly it. The contact rate is so much better.
Well, I think Markakis, my point was I think he can approach 20 home runs, and he hasn't done that.
But it's 20 home runs is nothing now.
But for him, it is. He had 8 last year.
Right, but in today's game, doing the things that he is doing, 20 home runs is not a huge jump.
If he ends up with Michael Brantley numbers, that's pretty good.
It's pretty good, but are we all really going to be completely shocked by that?
Markakis?
Yeah.
I think if Nick Markakis hits 20 home runs, we're going to be pretty shocked. Since the last 2 years combined, he had 21. The year before that, he had 3. Basically, over the last 3 years, this guy has hit 24 home runs, and he's on pace now to top that. I think it's and he has more walks than strikeouts.
Nick Markakis is the Jamie Moyer and Edgar Martinez of points-based leagues. He is.
Oh, he's a valuable
Nobody liked them at all. They were all like $1 players in all the points leagues for years.
By the
way,
for those who want more points league talk, next week's shows will have AJ Mass on them. There will be much more points league talk. Let's take a look at the schedule for Monday. There is a day game, so please get your weeklies in and your dailies. It's Atlanta and the Cubs at 2:20 p.m. Eastern if you're listening before that. If not, well, sorry. ESPN game on Monday Night Baseball, Tampa Bay at Kansas City. It's a good one. Ryan Yarbrough and Eric Skoglund. We're not going to spend any time at all discussing those pitchers, but
sorry,
ESPN
Leo.
Plus has Junior Guerra and Patrick Corbin, and I'm going to watch that. And the reason why is, Tristan, yep. Patrick Corbin's last 2 outings, I believe, the fastball velocity down at least 3 miles per hour. That's a telling sign in most cases, mm-hmm. but maybe Corbin is just changing the way he's doing things. He's pitched well despite that, so there's no like Dylan Bundy red flags here, but if Corbin gets lit today, I wouldn't be the least bit surprised, would you?
I'd be a little bit surprised. The thing that I go to is he still throwing the slider to the degree that he was before?
But you'd have to, obviously, a fastball velocity. Is
it will bother me.
3
yes.
to 90, something's wrong or something's
Absolutely,
changed.
Absolutely, yeah. Slider usage did dip noticeably below 40% in 2 of his past 3 outings. So it's a little bit more fastball reliance. You're right. Yeah, the velocity is going to come into play here.
Sean Manaea, Rick Porcello, that should be a good one. Porcello's had a good season. Last outing was against the Yankees, I believe, and he got shelled. So let's see what he does here against Oakland's home run bats, and Manaea is still very good. The other guy here I want to talk about is Tyler Anderson of the Rockies. 2 road starts this week, one starting tonight at San Diego. That seems like a good 2-start guy to me, Tyler Anderson.
Yeah, actually it is. Ranked very well this week. I consider him a sleeper. I did not write him up along with the Eduardo Rodriguez and Nick Pivetta, but he was the next guy I would have gone to as a value.
And I added Chris Stratton in a weekly league for his two starts as well. First one tonight at home against the Reds. And
a lot of two-start values this week.
Yeah, because like, you look at Monday's schedule. I mean, there's a bunch of guys here who are available in a lot of leagues on Tuesday as well. Tuesday, the ESPN Plus game is Garrett Cole at Jaime Barria. Barria might be best known for the 49-pitch first inning and the Brandon Belt at bat, but he's pitching okay. you know, he might stick around for the Angels the rest of the season. Might, could be a 20-start guy, ERA of 3.75, something like that. Minor league numbers are fine. You're not using him against Houston, I hope, or I don't think you should. But,
well, but that was a Coors game last outing.
It was, and he pitched fine. He pitched well.
Yeah, I mean, it does scare me. On paper, it does scare me, but...
By the way, Angels closer, Keenan Middleton's obviously going back to the DL with the elbow. I should have mentioned him earlier. I think it's Jim Johnson.
I'm not sure I want any of these guys. I mean, you know, we mentioned
Justin
Anderson.
This is a good team, though. This is not the White Sox. If Jim Johnson could be Fernando Rodney this year, he's been that
in
the past.
Yeah. And as a matter of fact, that's
a
real good comp. There's in fact another guy, actually, Brad Ziegler. When we talk about Brad Ziegler and his strengths and weaknesses, they go to the Jim Johnson play here, where the guy who gets tons of grounders and gets contact needs to have perfect command. They need to have a great feel for their pitches. So if Johnson has that right now, I'm with you.
What do you expect to see from Jack Flaherty Tuesday at Minnesota? That's a key guy we're all watching.
Yeah, I'm actually scared by this matchup. I would rather have Flaherty on my bench for it to evaluate. And I honestly, when I ran him through the projections, it did not come out with a good score in that game. I feel like it's not a good match for him.
Wednesday night baseball on ESPN. It's the Yankees at the Nationals. Ooh, could be a preview of the World Series. CC Sabathia and Max Scherzer. Scherzer is unbelievable. Sabathia is, you know, it's not the worst spot to use him. They're not going to get Matt Adams in this game. Well, maybe they will. I don't know. They could use him in left field. We'll see what happens with that.
I'd of course like to say that I would much rather have been scouting Tanner Roark in this game, who was originally scheduled there. That would have been great.
ESPN Plus has, Tyler Chatwood on the mound at Atlanta.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Chatwood's still walking way too many people.
You think you could set a record for lowest ERA and highest walk rate, like combination?
I was just going to ask something like that. Like, I mean, obviously, Nolan Ryan used to walk 100 guys a year, and Randy Johnson did it too.
So but, basically, you're comparing those two to Chatwood.
No, I'm comparing
hearing.
The walk rates.
3.35 ERA and a 1.54 WHIP.
That's yeah.
Kyle, are you using him?
He is.
Not
he
with
won't.
Any sort of confidence. I mean, really? Atlanta's balling right now, and he can't find the strike zone, but I...
Put your team on the line. Are you starting him?
I have him benched in a weekly league right now, and it kills me to do so. But, yeah, I mean, it's in the middle of the week. If I'm in a daily league, I'll roll the dice on him. Why not? You can recover from a
against
crazy whip.
Against scorching Atlanta Braves offense.
When I see a whip like that, I don't trust the ERA. That's just me.
The David Bush theory.
Yeah. When I see an ERA like that, I don't trust the whip. How's that, Eric? I'm going the other direction.
Oh!
Yeah, but you can't make
trust
that
the ERA over the whip. Wow.
I need to skip over some details here.
What's Tristan, the Sierra, 17?
Break the tie, Tristan. You know when you see a whip like that.
Whip over ERA.
It's always a whip.
Whip way over ERA and all the secondary numbers over whip.
I agree.
One last guy here because you just offered to me in a trade. Vince Velasquez of the Phillies. You trusting him or is it just the matchup at Baltimore or what? Or are you trying to dump him off of me because you know he's not that good?
It's the matchup at Baltimore based on the fact that in this past outing he had a good performance. Injuries are the concern I've always had with him. But to me, as long as he's facing a team that does have a lot of strikeouts in it, I'm going to play him. And that's a yes here.
Today's Hash Browns brought to you by ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter knew there was a smarter way to hire people, so they built a platform that finds the right job candidates for you, learns what you're looking for, identifies people with the right experience, and invites them to apply to your job. These invitations have revolutionized how you find your next hire. In fact, 80% of employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. And ZipRecruiter does not stop there. They even spotlight the strongest applications you receive so you never miss a great match. The right candidates are out there. ZipRecruiter is how you find them. Businesses of all sizes trust ZipRecruiter for their hiring needs. And right now, listeners to this fine show can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/Carabel. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Carabel. ZipRecruiter.com/Carabel because ZipRecruiter, it's the smartest way to hire.
Now the question becomes, have you taken the trade yet?
I like Manuel Margot, and so I don't
want... You got him benched, and you've got Tyler Chatwood active, so that's an interesting thing here.
I want to keep Margot around, and...
I get it.
And I don't trust Velasquez. If you, it was Jack Flaherty, I might do it.
But for Margot?
Yeah. I mean, I want to look into it further. I mean, I just think... I know everybody's given up on Margot. It's mid-May. But the skills are still there. I just can't believe that Manuel Margot is going to hit 202 for the entire season without power or speed. It's too good for that.
I do believe I would trade Flaherty for Margot, if that is what you would do. I need an outfielder this week.
Then
this
would I even use Flaherty over Chatwood? So
I don't know. Would you? In this case, I would, but
you
I'm not managing
a team. You said you weren't using Flaherty at Minnesota.
I would use him over Chatwood without question, but I'm also not managing a team if you had them.
I'd certainly rather for the final 4 months roster Flaherty's skills than Chatwood's, except I don't know if Flaherty's making more than 10 starts.
I don't know whether Margot is going to start hitting or avoid the DL, so we all have our risks.
All right, well, I'll give it some thought after.
Just giving a live window into trade chatter here.
No, I think
hoping Leo jumps in with a better offer,
I'm
too.
I'm surprised at you, actually. You never offer me trades.
We have a hard time making deals done. That's why I'm...
Tristan just backed himself into a corner by not having enough outfielders.
I did, and I'm admitting that I will have to overpay to get one.
Okay. All right, well, what do we got for questions today?
Well, first question is, how many players do you think had multiple combo meals last season?
Five?
I'll bet 15 did.
48.
All right, well,
oh, my goodness.
Wrong.
Wow.
Really?
Okay.
That's a lot.
So, yeah,
there
seven,
weren't even that many stolen bases.
So that means... Hot start, but... Yeah, not...
We're a quarter of the way through the season. That means we're behind pace.
That seems a little crazy.
So 48. Nobody had more than six. But
40. Wait. You're understanding my question. 48 players had at least one
two
game
combo meals
with a home run and a steal.
Yes.
All right.
Wait, 48 had at least two games with a
two
home
games,
run and a steal.
Multiple games.
Well, not 48 players. 48 times it happened.
No, 48 players.
48 different players
got two plus.
Had multiple combo meals in 2017.
And we have seven so far?
Yeah, so maybe not as outrageous as it sounds.
Wow.
All right. Under the actual question.
I had no feel on that one.
Yeah. Well, that's a tough one. A combo meal isn't really a...
It always feels like a lot.
Yeah. All right. Andrew wants to know what to do with Byron Buxton. Said the Byron Buxton experience hasn't really been all that fun this year or previous years for that matter. Still just 24, though. What do you think his value is in dynasty leagues right now?
I wrote about him last week.
Somebody didn't read that. Go read it.
It was Friday's article. He did nothing this weekend except strike out. I just think, like, if you're stashing a guy, is it Buxton or Margot? It's still Buxton if you want some, clarity there. I still think there's a 20 homer, 40 steal season in him, and he's 24. Are we really giving up on a guy like that already? So I would keep him stashed. You don't necessarily have to leave him active.
It's...
Isn't he a top 50 guy in your dynasty rankings?
Yeah, I still think there's a tremendous career coming, but the big concern is so far, the only thing that's been consistent at the major league level has been elite defense, as you had pointed out.
And injuries and strikeouts. Three things.
Well,
but other than that, he's great.
Yeah, but I mean, like, when he's on the field, that's what you're getting is elite defense, and that's not going to help any of us here. That's love the headline on that column, by the way.
I didn't write it.
I liked it.
What did it say?
That's the curious case of Byron Buxton.
Oh, he is curious.
Yeah.
And we're all curious. Okay, what's next?
Brian, too, is curious. He wants to know what's going on with Goldschmidt.
I knew this was coming.
Yeah. Him and Matt Carpenter were like 90% of the questions. His production at home's fallen off a cliff, and his K rate is spiking. Are you running for the hills?
First round pick. You still have him ranked in the top 10?
No, I didn't after about 2 weeks or so.
I have him after Freeman and Votto, I think, but still in round two. I don't think this home road split thing is a thing. He's batting 133 at home over 75 at bats, an area home run. On the road, he's fine, 910 OPS. He can't be the only Arizona hitter with a problem with the humidor. A.J. Pollock's doing fine at home. So this isn't humidor. Now, the strikeout rate, that worries me a little bit. Not stealing bases, that worries me a little bit as well. I mean, A.J. Pollock at home has 1,000 OPS. So don't give me this humidor. It's not humidor. What is it with Goldschmidt?
The one thing that did stand out when I took a look at him is he's getting behind the count quickly. 101 pitches in the zone on the first pitch of a count is fifth in the majors. That's not common for him.
Contact rate is cratered. I think he's a buy low. Like if I'm buying low on Edwin, I'm buying low on Goldschmidt. So I
think it's an approach problem.
Well, I think I would approach the owner in your league and go get him.
I would too. I think he's being challenged too much. He's going to hit a homer one day at the right time, and then that's it. Your chance is gone.
Bye. I'm going to move him out of my second round today, but not
why.
Not by a ton.
Why do that? You believe he's going to rebound? Doesn't this feel like the overnight kind of thing?
I believe there's a rebound coming, except I don't trust stolen bases. And I think part of the reason why we ranked Goldschmidt ahead of Votto and Rizzo and first baseman like that is because we were expecting 18 to 20 steals. I'm not sure we're getting that this year. So I do think there's a rebound coming, but I think he's closer to Edwin's value than he is Votto and Freeman's value.
So if he's getting on base at a 339 clip, which is roughly 70, 80 points below his norm, and he's got two steals on two tries.
He's getting
you
on
don't
base.
Think he could get to 15 plus?
Oh, I think he can. I'm just not sure he wants to. The problem I have here is the strikeout rate and the contact rate. It almost looks like he's hiding an injury of some sort.
But again, that
why
goes
would he
back
change his approach?
Because he's getting, they're pouring it over the plate for him at the beginning of the count. It's as if pitchers know that he's not hitting, they're challenging him, and at one point, this guy's true talent is going to show up. It's got to.
I'm buying low. I'm just, I can't view him the way I do Votto and Freeman. I don't know how you can.
All right, I'm going to go and make some trade offers for Paul Goldschmidt, I think.
Yeah, I would love to get him.
See if I can get him at third round value.
Everybody who's talking Humidor are just missing the point. If every other Diamondback's hitting fine at home, then why would one guy be effective? The way, I don't understand why pitchers are approaching him differently after 7 years of
I don't
greatness.
Either. And that's why I say when there's an unusual number that stands out to me, it's not so much that I mean, I don't sit there and scout Paul Goldschmidt. It's just that's very unusual. It's very look at his track record. It's very unusual.
It is. Okay, what's next?
Travis wants to know, how do you think the Yankees are going to balance playing time once Bird and Drury come back?
So that's you. I don't see Drury stealing any at bats at second or third. I mean, Andujar has to hit. And Torres is hitting, and he's a better defender. First base, though, I mean, Bird's got to play, right?
I kind of feel like Torres, Bird, and Drury are the three who need to play the majority of the time, and Andujar likely goes back to the minors. But as he said, he's shown he does belong. I'm not sure how this is going to play out. I don't think this means good things for Neil Walker, although he started to get some clutch hits lately. That's going to be a mix-and-match team that's a headache for weekly managers.
I mean, obviously they have players you know. Sanchez, Gregorius, the outfield is set. DH is set. I think Gleyber Torres plays every day.
He's got to.
You know, Andujar at third base, I would say he's not getting on base at all. It's 3 walks, 28 strikeouts, and his power hasn't been so great that he has to play. He's done nothing over the past week. I would probably agree that Drury at least splits the at-bats. I think Neil Walker's in danger of being on a team.
Right. I'd agree with that.
You know, but
he is, as I said, hitting a little better lately, but it's got to continue over the next week or two if he's going to just nail down a bench job for this team. That's why he was taking ground balls at third base the other day. The other thing, too, with Andujar is that I think he needs to be playing regularly. I don't think this guy's going to be served being a bench player.
Yeah, yeah. And after that great start, he hasn't done a whole lot. Okay. Next. A
couple more quick questions here. Ryan is struggling to hang in there on Matt Carpenter. Can he be dropped across the board? He's still rostered in the majority of ESPN leagues.
I think you should roster him. He's batting 145. Wow. Look at that.
Pretty incredible that he's hitting
that. He was benched this weekend. Mm-hmm. Why is that? Because he's slumping?
He's hitting 145.
Yeah, but he's not going to hit 145 for long. I mean, K rate way up, contact rate way down. This is the lefty Goldschmidt so far.
Do we need to read the minds of a certain manager who's making these decisions and looking at a 145 batting average?
Well, I mean, I understand sitting him for a weekend. All right, let's make that clear. But I don't think they're going to continue to sit him. He's still drawing his walks. He's still a top-of-the-lineup guy with power. 23 consecutive seasons of 20 home runs, at least 81 walks. You know what you're getting. Maybe he's hurt. Maybe it's just a slow start. I would keep him rostered, but
I do worry he's hurt.
Depends who you're picking up. I mean, it always comes down to this. If you want to drop Matt Carpenter, he's probably on. He's on the most dropped list. He's the fifth most dropped corner infielder after Villanueva. Again, he stopped hitting. Todd Frazier, DL, Matt Chapman, Andujar, Carpenter, Zimmerman, Olsen. Matt Olsen being dropped. There's such value on free agency right now. If all these guys are sitting there, all it takes is for Matt Olsen to have a three homer game, and then he's on the most added list again. And you're dropping Carpenter and these other guys for Matt Adams, which I agree with. I would actually,
Well, you kind of can't this week because of the terrible schedule.
This week you don't want to use either. But man, I mean, like, I'm not going to rank Adams over Carpenter for the rest of the year, so why wouldn't I do that?
Well, then that comes to the question of the full year rank versus using the guys right now, because I do think Carpenter's in that tier where you've got to start making decisions about getting stats today. To me, I can't make the top 20 first base case. I can't. Unless it is a points/on-base percentage league.
I love that because this is the last 7 days that Matt Davidson is on the most dropped corner infielders list, and he has 2 straight games with home runs. So you know that actually was worse before.
Oh, yeah.
And now it's gone like to less of a most dropped, and he's probably going to be on most added this time next week.
If you want advice from somebody who does that, it's just not me. Okay, I stick with players maybe too long. I don't make daily moves like that where I'm adding and dropping players who are similar. I don't do it. If I add Adams, I'm probably going to play him. This week, I would not. I have in a weekly, I'm sitting him. But I don't run through the grind of all these Carpenter, Alonzo, Matt Chapman types. I stick with one because I think in the end you're going to get more production if you just stick with one.
I would also say you probably, like me, play in more leagues that go deeper than what the 10-team standard would. So your instinct is going to go to the 12-team or the 14-team or the AL or the NL only. And in this case, we can't get rid of them. I think there's potentially a DL stint coming because the two stats that stick out to me are contact rate down over 10%.
Yeah, and they can play Jed Jerko.
They could.
Another guy who's going to be on the most drop was Adrian Beltre. You know, he's older. And, you know, Cano's injury was not because of age. But Beltre re-injuring the hamstring, that looks bad. I bet he's out a month now, wouldn't you say?
I hope not, but it's certainly conceivable. I mean, this is the perils of age.
I mean, I can't say that's the reason it happened, though.
I do think your injury risk does increase at this level. I love the guy, great skills, but at this age, you do run the risk of stuff like this and that it could take longer to return.
I've got him in a few places. Any other questions?
Here we got one more. Nicholas wants to know, what's to stop us from comparing Chris Archer to Jeff Samardzija with just a few more strikeouts? Have we not seen enough to drop him outside the top 20 pitchers?
Pretty sure I did. But... man, so hittable. And all the home runs the past couple seasons, he seemed like a guy to me. People were viewing the ERA on the wrong side of four last 2 seasons as an aberration. And I was viewing it as, well, no, I think that's what it is. But he's even worse now. And the FIP only saves him a little bit. High BABIPs the past 2 seasons. This is not about walks. K rate is down.
Yeah.
Leo, I'm sure you watch a lot of starts here for Chris Archer. I think Samardzija is a little mean as a comp, but... because he gives you a lot of innings, and it's more strikeouts.
I literally think that Keith Lipscomb and I had a conversation in which I compared Chris Archer to Jeff Samardzija. So we're on the same
page. Did you write this?
Wow. But, I mean, Archer had 249 strikeouts last year, people.
Right. No, I mean, the strikeout skills are there, and they always will be. Like, really, what he kind of compares to for me, which is a sore spot because I'm going to say this and then act on it in a league and it's going to flip in the wrong direction, is what Robbie Ray was before he sort of stopped walking people and started getting everyone out in addition to the strikeouts. Like, it's the strikeouts, but you know there's going to be some baggage there because he still misses bats. So, and he's not walking a ton of people.
Tristan, this seems like a guy you delve into deeper for an article because I don't even know what is wrong. I haven't looked at the individual pitches to see why this is happening.
Yep. I can tell you a little on those that he's another guy who leans extremely heavily on the slider. I've said I worry about what that'll do to him over the long haul. Year over year, over 40% each of the past 3 years, and this season he has a negative run value on it. It's the first time as a major leaguer he's had a negative score on that pitch.
Not a good sign there, huh?
Probably not.
All right, and the music stopped, which means our show is stopping. Any final thoughts here? Let's see, anything on the birthdays? National Dance Like Chicken Day. Like a chicken or what? I don't understand.
They're probably like a chicken day. I mean, multiple chickens, would they dance differently if they're all in a peck or a flock or whatever you call a bunch of chickens.
Very strange.
Please don't play the chicken dance.
Tuesday, and this should be every day, Tuesday, National Chocolate Chip Day. I'm in day four of a big Panera cookie.
I would imagine that there's also a National Chocolate Chip Cookie Day so that
there
you
is.
Can maximize your excuses. Yeah. Because they're probably Cookie Day, Chocolate Chip Day, and Chocolate Chip Cookie Day. So
One of my children eats the chocolate chips just out of a bag.
And thinks I love it.
Thinks I don't know this. The little, you know, little morsels. And then I started doing it. I would take a couple, like, after. They're pretty good.
They're so amazing on ice cream.
They're amazing
peanut
on
peanut butter sandwich. Get a nice warm toasted peanut butter sandwich and put some chocolate morsels on there.
Yeah, I'm interested in that.
Good stuff. You know, we got a petition for the Cowboy Cookie Day, National Cowboy Cookie Day.
What?
You know the Cowboy Cookie. This has come up on the show before.
I don't know the Cowboy Cookie.
It's the oatmeal raisin, except that it's chocolate chips, not raisins.
What? All right. Thank you. That was good. We're done for today. We will be back on Thursday to talk about all the no-hitters and the combo meals for the next 3 days. Thank you so much for listening and to our fine crew for making it all happen. For all of them, I am Eric. Have an awesome day.
Everything is awesome.
Cookies. Butter.
The theme song for the Fantasy Focus was created and performed by Eric Hutchinson. Check out more of his music at erichutchinson.com. Thank you for listening to the Fantasy Focus. For more great podcasts, log on to the iTunes Music Store or Pod Center at espnradio.com.